This is the Joy of Gaming. Welcome to the Joy of Gaming, Episode 7. I'm your host, Rich Lepore, and I am here with...
Jordan Alseca.
And Tim McNeil.
And today on Episode 7, we are going to be talking about the games we've been playing, as usual. Then move on to a little news. A couple weeks ago, Tim and I went and saw The Art of Video Games at the Smithsonian. We'll be talking about that. We'll also be talking about more Mass Effect 3 ending controversy, Peter Molyneux news, some NPD numbers, and some Fez news. I bet you can't guess what it is. And then as our final topic, we are going to talk about bad games and how we define bad games. What makes a game a bad game? And is it possible to have a campy video game? Discuss. So we will talk about all of those things later on. But for now, I'm going to throw it over to you, Jordan. What you been playing, man?
Yeah. Well, I guess the biggest release, well, depending on your strata of the gaming universe, the biggest release for Wii owners was that Xenoblade came out finally.
Oh my god, I am so freaking psyched.
Yeah, it's a good game. It's a really good game. It's worth the wait, and I think, you know, it's had the most critical acclaim of the three Operation Rainfall games.
Okay.
The Last Story, which is also coming out in the summer,
all right,
got slightly lower reviews, and then Pandora's Tower, which is getting its European release, I think, this week, roughly.
Do you know anything about that game?
I know very little.
Yeah,
I haven't really been paying attention.
What game?
Pandora's Tower.
No, I haven't heard much about it.
And it's kind of getting the most...
It's like no one knows anything about that game.
Yeah, well, it's gotten the most lukewarm reception. So if it does come out in America, I will still play it because
It's Project Wii game. Rainfall, what's up? Like, supporting Project Rainfall is, like, very important.
Yeah, I've been a big fan of Operation Rainfall since they started.
Oh, my bad, Operation. Is this the second time I messed up Project and Operation?
No, it's Operation.
Are you sure?
Yeah, I'm sure.
Earlier I was talking about...
Looking that up right now.
I guarantee you. But Xenoblade really has been a fun game.
All right. Tell me about the battle system, man, because it's kind of different.
It's MMO-ish, which a lot of people have been calling it a single-player MMO in a lot of respects, and it is in a lot of respects like that, because it has a story and you have a narrative and you're going, but you go through huge areas. Like the starting area of Colony 9, which is where Shulk, the main character, lives, has got a bunch of stuff you can do right out the gate. There are about...
So it's the anti-Final Fantasy 13.
Pretty much. I mean, there's about 30 side quests in the first area that you can go around
is
doing.
Is it 30?
Yeah.
This game sounds immense.
Oh, it is.
I mean, when I heard that it was on the back of, like, two giant metal behemoths, I sort of, like, was starting to think that might, like, limit the scope. Apparently not.
It's huge. I mean... They've compared it to the size of the entire game world to the size of the Japanese archipelago. So, I mean, and it seemed really big so far. Just running around on the first really big section was the Bionis' leg, and there's just tons of enemies and stuff to do. And
are the enemies cool?
I mean, they're kind of standard enemy types. I mean, there's wolves and rabbits and stuff like that. But, I mean, they're presented in an interesting way, and they have hierarchies within their... particular species that, you know, you kill a leader and the others might run away type of thing.
Well, that's cool, I guess.
But, I mean, I haven't seen too much of that.
See, what I wonder, though, is how do they add complexity? See, I played, like, the first hour of the game. I visited a friend of mine a couple weeks ago, and he works for Stars and Stripes. And, you know, that military newspaper? He's, like, their second-in-command on... Well, it is. It's a military newspaper up out of D.C. And he's, like, the second-in-command video game reviewer there. I met him actually through you, Tim.
Yeah.
This is our friend Sam. And he gets all kinds of, like, you know, video games from publishers to play. And he had Xenoblade sitting on his coffee table, like, unopened. And
a week before everyone else got it.
Right. Oh, right. And I walk in there. And I'm like, what? What is that? What's sitting right there? And he's like, oh, that? I've had it for like 3 weeks, dude. I haven't even touched it. I almost lost it, man. I mean, we have been pining over this game forever and a day. You know, literally, I don't know if I mentioned this before on the podcast, but I actually imported the European version like for like $90 and like I've had it for a long, long time. And then like proceeded to try to get a European Wii just to play this game, and then found out that like found it very difficult to get a European Wii. And while I was in that process, found out that Project or Operation Rainfall.
It is Operation. Yeah. I've looked it up and I was wrong before. Okay.
Anyway, Operation Rainfall was successful, and then the game was going to be released here. But anyway, I played the first hour of it over there. I was the one to break the seal of the freaking game. I can't believe it. But it. It's slow starting combat wise, right?
Yeah, and like it's an RPG. I didn't really expect it to come out of the gate.
Well, right, but what I mean is, you know, it's an MMO, so the way it works is on like a sort of like an active time battle system, but yet you're moving all around in free space.
Yeah, you auto attack, and your teammates auto attack, and they do their own skills. It really doesn't open up until you learn stuff because you start off with no skill.
Well, the one
sort of like FF12 in a way.
Yeah. Yeah. All you do is auto attack at first. Yeah. And you have one special attack you can use after you've auto attacked enough times. But it's not until you start leveling up and you eventually get about 8 other abilities you can use in battle. And as Shulk, you also have, once you get the Monado, which is the main blade of the game, that allows him to hurt the enemy's robots, which are the Mechanus.
So there are certain enemies that are like only vulnerable to that.
Yeah, because he has them, but he can also use it to enchant his teammates so that they can hurt the enemy. He can speed them up. It has buffs, essentially. Okay. But then he also has different types of attack that, you know, if you're behind the enemy, it does more damage. It boosts your attack power. He gets more complex abilities as the game goes on, and the combat becomes more fun because of it. And you can play as any of your teammates and experience their play style.
Oh, you mean you can switch around?
Yeah.
Oh, that's cool, though. It was like that in 12, just like you were saying, though, Tim, also.
Yeah. I mean, it sounded similar in that aspect.
Yeah.
It sounds very similar to 12. I mean, the little bit that I played was quite similar.
Yeah, it's similar.
At least it doesn't have that license board, though, man. That thing was a BITCH.
I didn't mind the license board in 12. Pretty much everything else bothered me about 12, though.
But there's a lot of complexity in it. You know, there's different armor, which as a small buff that I like is that all of the armor has its own look on the character models.
So totally. If you're going to have loot in your game, like, please make it, like, visible on your character.
And there's, you know, the standard weird kind of items you get in RPGs. There's swimwear, or there's swimming oil. So for a long, and it was the best armor I got. So for a while, the two guys in my party were running around shirtless because they were buffed by their oil.
Sure, swimming that's oil? Why you got it, George.
But it's just been a fun game. It's opening up more. The story is a little slow to start, but it's an RPG again, so I'm not really expecting the story to immediately be. But then again, it's had some good moments so far. And the fight choreography in the CGI, well, not CGI, it's all in-engine, but the fight choreography is really good and have been, you know, compelling to watch. So overall, I'm really enjoying it. I'm only about 14, 15 hours into it. So I can't really say too much about the story or any of the development.
Isn't that amazing? You could be that far into a game and like be like, but I can't really tell you too much about the story yet.
Well, that's the thing about the guy who made that game, Tetsuya Takahashi. Who I'm probably the only guy who knew that here.
No,
but he made Xenogears and Xenosaga as well. And Xenosaga was supposed to range across 6 games. Each one were about 60 hours apiece. And then Xenogears, it was when, you know, they used to advertise everything as, oh, this 90-hour journey. That was the only game I actually remember playing, and it was like, oh, that actually was 90 hours.
Yeah, I was bad. I'm sure you know, listeners know Tim was a big fan of Xenogears. Yeah. I loved Xenosaga and was bummed that it got kind of torn down in length. But yeah, Xenoblade's been really fun.
You guys still got 3 freaking whole games. That's like
two
unheard of.
Two was so bad.
Unless
it was.
You like, unless
it really
you,
was so bad.
Unless you're a Dot Hack fan, that's unheard of in gaming.
Yeah. But, I mean, 2 ruined the entire storyline across the whole 3 series. 3 was decent, and you know it was a good try to save it, and it was a good game, but it could have been so much better.
It should have been subtitled Salvaging or something.
But
Salvaging the Wreckage.
Overall, Xenoblade's been really fun, and if you have a Wii, go to GameStop and buy this.
Because I don't think it's going to be around for long. Like, I'm worried about that. Like, I'm actually still finishing up a couple games, so I haven't picked up my copy yet, and I'm actually worried that, like, it may be gone in 2 weeks.
Yeah.
Because I don't think it's, like, blowing out off shelves or anything.
But another game I've been playing, which you don't really have to worry about selling out, is Digital A Love Story, which is a free game that you can get online. And
do you know about this yet, Tim?
No, I've not heard this.
Because I think, isn't this the one, Jordan, you were saying that Tim would be interested
in? No, I sent him a game called One in One Story that was about a relationship, which was a little platformer. But
okay.
Yeah.
All right.
Digital A Love Story, you can get it for free online. It's downloadable. And it's about a 2-hour game. And what it is you play as a guy in 1988. Who has just gotten his first computer, And he's learning about how to log on to bulletin board systems and do posts. And so that's what you do. You start posting on a BBS, which I only know about because I've learned about it. I'm not old enough to really know what they are in practice, but this gave me an idea. And so he starts posting on, and it's essentially like a forum for anyone who doesn't know. It's like a forum, but you have to dial in and then make one post and then wait for a reply. And so he starts doing this, and he meets a girl who he starts to kind of get into a relationship with. And then the board gets attacked.
Or you mean you do?
Yeah, yeah. Because you put your own name in as the player avatar. And then you pick your own name. You pick your passwords for the sites.
That's so cool. It's very meta.
Yeah, it's immersive. And then once you start kind of finally falling in love, the board that you frequent gets crashed. And you have to go to another board and start using hacking and long-distance stuff to kind of figure out what's going on the internet. Because suddenly stuff, well, not the internet, but BBSs start going down and there's something going on. And so you're trying to get reconnected with this girl that you've started talking to. And you're finding stuff out about her because, you know, she called out for help when the system
Okay,
went
this
down.
Sounds amazing.
Yeah, it's just a short, you know, about, I played it for about 2 hours.
It's got a mystery, right?
Yeah. You learn stuff as you go. Stuff starts getting revealed.
Is the mystery cool? Like what?
When you say learn stuff, do you mean like gameplay mechanics or like
story-wise? You're learning stuff. Because outside, I mean, there's not much to the gameplay other than going and posting and kind of figuring stuff out that way. It's just kind of emulating that experience of being on a bulletin board system.
But what I'm saying is like when you do find out like what happened and why the boards went down and like why she yelled help, is it like awesome? Now I figured out why and it's so cool.
Yeah, I thought it was cool. I thought, and it had a really good ending.
Awesome. Awesome.
The same maker also made a game called Don't Take It Personally, Babe, It's Not Your Story, which is a more modern kind of, it's based around being a school teacher and you have access to everyone's Facebook messages, private and personal, and you're helping them through their problems. I haven't played much of that one yet, but both of them are really good games.
These are like borderline ARGs.
I mean, they're download, it's not, it's sort of.
Yeah, it sounds very ARG-esque.
Yeah. It's just, it's contained. So there,
contained, but see, there are these games that I used to see, like, even in boxes, like in Best Buy, and they'd be like an interactive mystery on the internet. And so it's like you'd play the game, but then you'd go to websites and, like, get clues and shit.
Yeah, yeah.
And then, like, you know, it all, like, you know, so that it actually interacted with the real world. It was interesting.
Yeah.
There was one, and I always forget the name of it, but it was, like, one of the first big attempts of an ARG, and it was a total bomb.
Not I Love Bees, obviously.
No, it wasn't I Love Bees because that was more just, you know,
a huge hit. Sim. Yeah.
But this was just a straight up game in itself, and it would like email you and call you and like do weird stuff in the middle of the night. So you'd like wake up and hear like a phone recording message at like 2 a.m. And
isn't this just one that's like really creepy?
It's supposed to be like sort of a, I wouldn't say a murder mystery, but more of like a thriller in sort of those aspects.
Like the game. You ever see that movie?
Yeah.
Yeah. Actually, no, it's very similar to that sort of thing. Yeah. It's like imagine if you're actually playing that. Mm-hmm. Like the movie, the game, but yeah. In the real world. That's actually a very good description.
Yeah. So that was a fun game. It's free. So, you know, you just look Digital Love Story and you can download it. And
play it on like freaking anything, right?
Yeah. It's just a fun game.
Only 2 hours?
About. If you get stuck trying to figure something out, it'll take longer.
What? Oh, wait. How do you figure this? Like, okay, you didn't really talk about the gameplay itself. Like,
well, you learn stuff. You start off with only 2 bulletin board systems, but eventually you learn how to access more through hacking and stuff like that. You follow email clues with other people to figure out where you're supposed to go. So if you don't know who to email at a particular moment or where you're supposed to find and download a message, it might take a little while.
Okay. But that's the only gameplay. Okay.
Yeah, no real hiccups to it.
I see.
Other than that, the only game I've really played is Fez, which on our last podcast, yeah, we were talking
I cannot
about.
Believe,
we can't wait for Fez to get a release date.
I was sleeping on the mic for just a second here. Oh my God, Fez came out. Yay. It's amazing.
3 weeks ago, we were waiting for a release date, and this morning, the game came out. And
yeah, it was like announced that it was coming out like 2 weeks before launch.
Yeah.
Didn't you like find out like a day after we recorded the last podcast? Like,
pretty much.
It's coming out in 2 weeks. I couldn't believe that. Because we had just gotten done seeing Iggy in the movie. And in that movie, like, it's very bleak. Like, you know, Phil Fish is just like, you know, it looks like he might die before that game gets made. You know what I mean?
They got the timeline and it's like, oh, it's 2009. It's supposed to be released in the spring. And then it's like, oh, it's 2010. Oh, it's 2011.
Yeah, it just kept getting pushed back.
And the guy's just like drowning, yeah.
But you know what? It came out, and I played a few hours of it this morning, and it was fun.
I cannot wait to get to your house later and try it.
I named Portal 2 my favorite game of last year, and it's very much in that milieu of you don't really have anything to fight. I mean, you had turrets to fight in Portal 2 and the occasional boss, but it was mostly about figuring out how to maneuver the environment to get to where you need to be. And that's kind of what Fez is. You go around and you find you're looking for cubes. And you know what Fez is you're a 2D character and you can rotate the world.
Well, you just like the world just went 3D, right?
Yeah, world, you get this magical Fez on your head that allows you to realize, oh, the world is 3D. And so you can rotate 90 degrees the world that you're at currently. And the way it works is perception, whatever is 2D to the character is 2D.
Here's what I don't get, though, and obviously I'll get it probably the minute I start playing it. But like, okay, let's say you're on this four-sided thing, this tower, let's say. You're on one side of it. When you flip it, aren't you like off-screen now?
It depends. No, because like if you're at the corner of a tower, if you're on the right corner of a tower and then you rotate it,
oh, you'll be
right,
on.
You'll be on the left corner.
Okay,
of it.
Okay.
And yeah. So it's stuff like that.
That's how they do it. Okay, because I was gonna say, like, if you're in the middle of one side of the tower and you flip, but you can't flip unless you get to the edge, right?
No. And then say you're climbing up a wall of vines, and the vines don't connect to the next edge, but if you rotate it so that you can see the vines from that angle, they do connect, and you can climb around the corner.
Huh. It sounds like one of those things like you see it and it makes sense immediately.
Yeah,
yeah.
But it's fun. There really aren't gameplay trailers. I mean, now that the game is out, you'll probably be able to find gameplay trailers. But most of the trailers were just seeing the world rotate.
Are you going to pick this one up, Tim?
I'm definitely picking it up. I'm not sure exactly when because I'm really broke right now. But I'm definitely planning on getting it. I mean, it's a game I was looking forward to like back when it was first released. I remember finding it when I was browsing the internet, maybe in like 2008 or so. And I was
you
like,
mean
oh,
first
that
announced?
Game was cool. Yeah.
Yeah.
But it's really fun. I've had the good fortune to play some varied and cool stuff for the past couple of weeks, and Fez is a game I can't wait to go home and play some more.
Awesome. All right. On that note, on the indie tip, Tim, take it away.
Just to mention that ARG I was talking about earlier, it's called Majestic. That was the name of it. I always forget it. But that was a really cool ARG idea, but it kind of bombed. Anyway, so I've been playing basically two games. I played Journey, which was recently released for the PlayStation Network. And anyone who listens to the podcast knows I'm a huge fan of that game company. And yes, that is the name of the game company. I'm a huge fan of that game company, and I was really looking forward to Journey.
Is there anyone in particular who works for that company that you like?
I really love Jinova Chen. Like, I would have his babies, you know? Okay. I mean, he's the coolest guy in the world because he was like, I'm going to move to America, and I really love Final Fantasy VII, and I got to change my name apparently, so I'm going to call myself Jinova. I mean, how cool is that? That's why his name's Jinova, and that's his real name. And he's an amazing
hardcore.
Video game designer.
That guy's hardcore.
Yeah. But so I've been playing Journey a bit.
You played this now through also Jordan, right?
Yes-ish.
What does that mean?
I'll let Tim talk about it first, and then I'll share my experience.
Okay.
Journey is a game that I think you need to play just in one sitting. It's just like, because it's so abstract. It's really, really weird. It's like all that game company's games, they express everything through the visuals, so it's very open to interpretation. And so the way I interpret the game is you're like a guy, and he's kind of almost going on a walkabout sort of thing. And you're just in this vast, empty desert, and there's just this really large mountain like way down on the horizon that you're just sort of going to. And so you go to different areas, and as you're advancing, you find these different ruins where you have to – there's these glowing things that you can do this little shout that you do, and it like powers up the stuff, and you powers up the things, then you can kind of go to the new areas in each one. And each area is really varied. Like, it's really, really beautifully done artistically, because even though you're in the desert for one area, it looks like you're underwater because they use all this other stuff that sort of like is kind of wispy that you can fly off of, and they sort of make it dark so it looks like it's coral and everything looks darker so it looks like it's just water and you can sort of float everywhere we're going in the area. And then there's a place where it's like all snowy and stuff. But anyway.
It sounds cool.
And so as you're going through all these areas, you see these sort of ruins where they've got these like, you know, the stories on it, and you're kind of thinking that you're seeing someone in the past. But as it goes on, you kind of start to realize that you're seeing your own story written on these walls. And so it's kind of cool because it's like you get that it's sort of all about you being the same. But at the same time, any other person who's playing the game, who's on the same section that you're on, can be in your game. And it's completely an independent other player that you're playing with. And they're just going through the same objectives with you. But it's not something that just stays constant. Like, if you get too separated from the game, from the person, they'll leave completely. And it's not like they have a choice to do it. It just sort of happens. And what's cool about it is because it's sort of like a walkabout. It's like a thing of independent journey or, yeah, like the name, like an independent journey in discovery. When you see the other people, it's like they're going through the same experience with you. And it's just like, oh, my God, did you just see that sort of thing? And even though you can't express that to the people, you still get that they're experiencing that just through like through the visuals and just having the little dynamics of being able to make like a little shout and stuff like that. And that's what makes it really, really impressive because you really feel attached to a person that you can't talk with and all you see is them moving around with it at the same time. And as you're going through your sort of story, you see that sort of stuff on the walls as well. And then there's even other stuff like when I was playing the game, I was in the last level and there's one guy who had been with me for like 10, 15 minutes. We'd gone through like two or three levels. And then when I got to the very ending, I sat and I waited for that guy to be there. Because I was like, we've been through this whole thing, through this entire wasteland. Wow. I want this guy to come through with me too.
It was a bonding experience.
Yeah, and it was just like, but then we'd got you separated and he couldn't come back. And I was like, oh man. And I legitimately felt sad. I was just like, I lost this guy forever. But that's the way it sort of thing.
So it's like longing in the desert.
Yeah. And what's cool about it is like, there's so many things in the game that when you just sort of see it, you're like, oh, it's just this little metal thing. But then as you play it, you kind of realize that those might actually be gravestones. And so it's like you get the idea that there's all these people coming through it as well and that they're dying and that there's this big journey. And in the very last level, it's hard to interpret because it kind of seems that your character may die as well on his journey and not achieve it. And then, so then he kind of goes to heaven and that's the last level or he actually achieves it. I can't really tell. But then you go back to the very first thing and so it's like you get like a reincarnation cycle. And so it's just a really, really abstract game. You got to play it. It's just an experience
in itself.
Yeah, it
sounds like... The only reason I'm hesitant is it's a little expensive. I mean, I know they took years to make it.
It's totally worth $15.
All right.
I mean, you spend $15 on one meal. If you're telling me that a meal somewhere is more than journey.
Of course I'm not. But I haven't played the game, so I don't feel as passionate and you know, deserving about it as you do.
I'll go ahead and agree with everything Tim said, that it's an awesome game. My problem is that I had a bad experience with it because I beat Journey in about 20 minutes.
You beat it in 20 minutes?
Yes.
How did you beat it in 20 minutes?
I was playing. I didn't buy it. I was home over spring break. Or not over spring break. I was home.
Wait, from start to finish?
I played it on my friend Adam's system, which, you know, friend of the show. He was on last time.
Yeah.
And there's a point early in the game where you get to kind of the first temple, I guess. And I opened a door with the music power. Well, I want to explore this place a little more. And I went off to the side, and there was this glowing space, and I went, okay, I'll go through here. And I end up in the Snowing Mountain.
Oh, that's the hub world.
Yeah, I ended up at the last part of the game.
Oh.
Like, almost immediately. And then I just kind of, I didn't realize it because Adam wasn't there, so I just kept playing. And I was getting fought, I was fighting, there was a dragon attacking all of a sudden. I was just going, how is this? And then, bam,
those things
over.
Are scary as hell.
They were, yes. So I missed a huge – I missed about two-thirds of the
game. Well, because you basically just played the last level of the game.
Yeah, I played
because,
the beginning.
Because they had that one world, so you don't have to go through the entire game to go to where you want within that starting place. But if you just go to, like, start a new journey or something with that, I don't know the exact sort of thing, you can start it from the very beginning.
Well, I know, and that's what I did. I started a new journey, but then I got to this hub, and there was another guy there, you know, like you said, because that happens. And he just – I thought, okay, this is a puzzle because he kept kind of going up higher levels and doing musical notes. So I went with him, and I kept, all right, I'll help out. And we got all the way to the top, and there was a door. So I went through it, and so I ended up, you know, and I did get to experience being with another guy, and he was sticking with me, and he helped me when I got hit by the dragon, because I did not have enough scarf link.
Well, I mean, you
point.
Can't die.
Yeah, it's I know you can't die, but
wait,
I was out of scarf.
Wait,
at that
what
point,
is the
so.
Scarf?
The scarf is sort of like a life meter, and the longer your scarf is, the higher you can jump, which is sort of like the biggest mechanic with it. You can sort of fly with it.
Oh.
And when you do your little shout, it puts like a little magical aura thing on your scarf because it's got like a charge.
It sounds like this game has more mechanics than either of their previous two games.
No, it's about the same. I mean, it's very basic mechanics with it.
Yeah, what's there is light.
And one of the things that keeps you attached to the other person is when they do their shout, it'll have the magical aura on your scarf. So you can build off of each other's scarves if you're together. But you can't do that alone. And so that's one of the reasons the way to sort of keep it together. But that's the reason that sort of gets you together, but then you sort of want to go through it together.
Yeah, so I just missed a lot of the game. I still want to play it again because obviously I missed a lot. But I still agree. I thought the ending was very well done and just moving, even though I hadn't been playing that long. I think that's the beauty of it. You don't have to play it long to really get invested in it.
Yeah, and what I like about it is it's like, it's one of those things where you see something and you don't really understand it, but that doesn't bother you that you don't understand it. Because at the very end of it, you're like, this hit me on sort of like an emotional level, but not on a cognitive level. And I really appreciate their ability to do that in games. And yeah. I think they do that incredibly well.
So it was a good game. I just have to actually play
it. Wait, so the reason that that was available for you to warp like that is because Adam had already played the game. Is that right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Otherwise, that wouldn't have been
there. No, because he didn't know what it was.
Okay. I get it.
So, yeah.
What else did you play, Tim?
I've also been playing Closure, which is another independent PlayStation Network game.
Let me tell the listeners this. So Tim decided you had not this week but last week off, right?
Yeah.
And you decided that it was going to be like indie game week.
Pretty much, yeah. So it was indie game week. So I wanted to go through Closure, and I wanted to play Limbo again, and I wanted to play Journey. And so I got through Journey, and I got through most of Closure, but I wasn't able to go through Limbo again. In Closure, it's a unique game because it's a puzzle platformer. It's very artistic, akin to Limbo or Braid or anything like that. But the basic
it doesn't have the same hype, though.
It doesn't have the same hype of it, which I was kind of surprised at. It kind of seems knockoffish a little bit. It's got its own stuff to keep it, you know, unique, but you can definitely tell it was influenced by the other stuff. Okay. And so I think maybe that's one of the reasons it wasn't.
I see. It's a little derivative, and so people don't give it the quite the credit.
Yeah. But what's cool about it is the gameplay mechanic is basically if there's not light on something, it doesn't exist in the game. And so there's like a world that you can go through and you can walk in the lights and you can see walls and stuff like that. But if there's not the light on that wall, it doesn't exist. And so if you had a little light on a wall, then it could become a platform because you could jump on the top of it where the light ends. But then if you didn't have the light at all, you'll just fall into pits and dies. And so you're just going through an entire just puzzle area, similar to like Limbo and Braid does the same sort of thing with it. But that's sort of the mechanic with it. So you got to have times where you're like, all right, so I've got three light bulbs and I've got to keep this one here and drop this one here while I get this key. But then I can drop this light bulb down this pit. And then I could fall down this other place that's actually a platform, but because the light bulb's not there, now it's a pit, so I can get down to the light bulb under me. And you're sort of making those sort of thought processes throughout the entire game. And it's kind of cool that way. And then at the same time, and this was what reminds me even more of Limbo, is it's kind of got like you're almost in a purgatory type of feel of it. Because,
yeah, and there's these different characters you were telling me,
right? Yeah, there's this one main character, and it's like this little weird spider-looking demon who's got like a large, empty just eyeball in his face that whenever you pick something up, he'll stick it in there, and that's like where the light's coming from. But then he can kind of – he goes through these three doors, and it puts you into these three characters. And one of them's like a factory worker, and one of them's this little girl in like a carnival. Another one's a girl in like a hospital. And it never really says like what their relationship is, but it's weird because to me at least, it's like you're almost living through the people's last moments of their life. Because you can only see, like, if you think about just only what you can see exists. And that's sort of like, you know, only what you see in life exists and sort of things. And if you're going through the last moments of it, and every single time you go outside of it, you just sort of disappear. But in all the stories, or at least as little bit of story there is, there's sort of like you're in a dangerous area where it's alone and dark, and you kind of got to get to an area that's safe. And so the spider demon sort of goes into their mind and they're going to that sort of thing. So it's almost like they're leading them out the darkness to the light or something like that. And so that's what makes it kind of akin to Limbo, where it's like you got that same dark and light everywhere. And, you know, you're got that same going to heaven or, you know, escaping death sort of mentality with it, with the graphics. And so it's a cool game. But like I said, it seems very, very Limbo influenced. But I think it's definitely worth playing if you've got a PlayStation.
Okay. You know, that's one that I never probably would have ever picked up. But
yeah, I hadn't even heard of it. And then when I was getting Journey, it was on the top for the, you know, you should get this game. And I was like, oh, that looks kind of cool. And then I played the demo and I liked it. And so I downloaded it.
Awesome. Well, can I move on to what I've been playing?
Sure. Go ahead.
All right. So I recently have noticed that on IGN, they have been dogging certain games. Two in particular are Ninja Gaiden 3 and Operation Raccoon City, the new Resident Evil game. So these are two games that I was definitely looking forward to. And when I say that, I was looking forward to them with a degree of hesitation, especially Raccoon City. You know what I mean? I knew it wasn't going to be a numbered Resident Evil game. I knew it wasn't going to be really a story. I knew it was going to be sort of Left 4 Dead in the Resident Evil universe. And I knew not to expect too much. But the little bit that I wanted from it was for it to be like, at least to have herbs and to have, like, you know, first aid spray. And it does have that stuff. And then also just to have the vibe of Resident Evil, even if the gameplay was different, even if the story isn't going to be there, just to have the vibe. And it just doesn't. It feels like it's made by a completely different developer because it is. Bless you. Because it is. And, you know, I just think that, I don't know, it's really bad. You played this too, Jordan, right?
Yeah, I red boxed it last night. And I've played through the first two missions, which I think is
that's about where I'm at, yep. Judging from my achievements.
Yeah. It's just very...
It's so blah.
It's got Mass Effect 3 style controls, but they aren't done as well.
Oh, the controls are so busted. You know what the worst part is? You got me riled up, sorry. The worst part is that the bullets, they don't feel good when you shoot them, and when they hit stuff, you can't even tell they hit. It's like the things that spoken about aspects, like all the people that know how to make shooters that are great, like Killzone and Resistance and Halo and Call of Duty, you know, you never think about it, but those developers are geniuses at making the guns feel great and the bullets to have weight to them and to have impact. And when you hit things, for it to feel like a shot that just hit somebody and took them down, like, you know, it has weight and eminence and an effect, and it's like this cause and effect, and that game doesn't have any of it. It's so light. It's like ting ting ting, you could be shooting peas.
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of times you'll rain shots onto a dude and they won't really react. And even worse, it's one of those things where,
and the guns suck.
We're talking about we're going to be talking about laughably bad or bad games in general, and it has one of those laughably bad qualities where you'll shoot a guy 5 times and they will spill gallons of blood onto the floor, and yet they'll be fine.
Right.
And it's just it. And another
the graphics
big,
are busted. And William Birkin,
the big are you complaining? What are you?
He looks busted as hell.
Well, he looked like he should, I guess. I mean, just
he
to
looks
say,
like a low res weird version of himself. But
he looks like William Birkin. But I was going to kind of talk about him too. Kind of going back to that idea of impact is. There's a part in the first level where you're running from Birkin, who's taken the G virus, and he's got this huge arm on one side with an eyeball, and it says shoot the eyeball to slow him down. And I did it at first with a shotgun, and it was doing fine. Bam!
Shotgun works pretty well for that.
But then I died, and another problem with the game is if you pick up weapons, when you die, you automatically reset to your basic loadout.
Yep.
Which is a little busted just because.
Wait, how's that any different than other shooters?
It's like that in a lot of shooters, but I
well,
hear
it
what
is,
saying.
But there's no ability to kind of get your stuff back.
So there's not like lots of weapon stashes lying around or anything like that.
It's
well, at least
there's a
in
lot
Halo,
of ammo stashes,
in Halo,
there aren't a lot of weapons.
Like in Halo, you fall, you know, you revert to your loadout in Halo, but you can go back to where you died and pick up the weapons. So it's like that, you know.
Gotcha.
But in this game, I mean. There's weapons lying all over the floor, but they're all the generic shitty weapons.
Yeah.
Like, there'll be a million assault rifles, but, like, if you've leveled up at all, your gun is better than that.
And kind of going back to that, I died and I had to restart, and I was being chased by Birkin, and I had an assault rifle. And I was unloading about 10, 15 rounds into that eye, and he just kept coming and smacking me down.
And then that game is full of artificial gating. When I say artificial gating, like, you know, because it's a 4-player co-op game, you know, a good co-op game like that, like Left 4 Dead, for example, you know, it does it as minimally as possible. And, you know, like, and it has those rooms that, like, you know, you all go into, and then once everyone's in, you shut the door.
Yeah.
Well, this doesn't just, this has those, and then it also has, like, 15 other doors in between each of those that you have to like all be there and go through.
And not just that, it'll have doors where it's like they're not locked and you'll try to open it. Everyone has to be here or you can't go through
the
door.
Which is just takes you right out of the experience. But the real problem with that game is it's just okay, let me take that back. Everything's wrong with that game. Everything's wrong with that game. It's not fun.
Another problem I ran into is the AI is atrocious.
It's not fun.
I mean, your teammates will get stuck on the simplest stuff. I had to run through about I had to run about 2 solid minutes back to push someone out of a door so that they would run and catch up with us.
Wow, that's horrible.
Because the game wouldn't let us go forward.
I played a little bit of this at PAX because they had it on like the demo. And so it was a lot of things where it's like, oh, I bet they're going to fix this. But it sounds like they didn't fix any of it.
Doesn't seem like it.
To me, the biggest crime of the game is that the shooting feels like shit. The shooting the guns feels like shit. And you can't have a shooter that feels like ass. That you just can't have that. It's like if there's one thing your shooter has to do, it's shoot. And this game just can't shoot straight, man.
One of the things that I was worried about when this game was coming out at first, you know, when they were talking about it is they're like, ooh, play as all these umbrella operatives.
Oh,
and stuff
by the
like
way,
that.
They're the most nondescript, generic, stupidly codenamed lame asses you've ever. I can't believe they were actually touting
that. I was just about to say that. Yeah, it was just like they're all like, "Ooh, this is generic, edgy person
this
too.
Is four
who's
kind
of dominatrix E.
This is
this
four
is
eyes.
Generic one who's kind of rough and like a doctor
yeah, but
or
this
something.
Is field scientist girl.
Yeah, Hunk was, I mean, Hunk was in it for about 2 minutes.
Yeah, but you can't be Hunk. The only one you'd want to be.
And then I was worried about it because I'm like, all these characters seem really lame. But if you had solid gameplay, that wouldn't be that big of a deal.
No.
But then apparently the gameplay sucks too. And it's just – and even like from storyline stuff, I'm just like, oh, maybe if they tried to, you know, make it so you're kind of in the same world but you're not the same stuff. But it's like, go kill Leon. And it's like
– the only plus
what's this
I
have
could
to do with anything then?
The only
I don't
want
to
go kill Leon.
I would really say is I got to the second level and I went through City Hall and I went, this seems mapped familiar. Like it looks like they might have put effort into making things look right. But still – I mean, that shouldn't be the only plus to your game.
Slant 6 fucking botched this shit, man. I mean, it's just bad. And like, okay, and not bad for the reasons everybody wants to say. You know, it's not like normal Resident Evil games. I knew that going in.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
I wouldn't mind that.
Right. I was ready for what it was supposed to be, but boy, does it not pull it off. And you know, I know money was put into this game. You know what I mean? I know time and effort was put into this game. There's no excuse for it playing like it does. I mean, it plays like developers that don't know what they're doing, you know? I don't know. I mean, I can't program games either, but I don't know, dude.
Well, to go to the positive, I think you actually said you enjoyed Ninja Gaiden M.
Yeah, that's what I was going to go to next, is that, you know, IGN actually, I think, gave a higher review to Operation Raccoon City. Ninja Gaiden got a 3, dude. That game was slaughtered. They said things. I don't have the quote with me right here, but they said things about that game that you wouldn't say about your worst enemy, dude. It was like, this is a, you know, abysmal piece of crap that, you know, I wouldn't pick it up to save my life. And I just can't even remember. Could you pull up some of these quotes?
Yeah, I was gonna check the Metacritic really quick.
Yeah. It's got a great little one liner just about how freaking horrendous they thought this game was. But I really enjoyed it. I'd give it an 8. I mean, here's the thing about it. Okay, so I've played 1 and I played most of 2. And the games are great, very hard. I actually play the Sigma versions of the games because I was able to play like an easier mode. Because I just don't want to, I know, okay, I'm a puss, but I just don't want to get, you know, I don't want to have to restart the game 1,000 times. That's just not fun for me.
It's got a 58 on Metacritic and 9 negative reviews, 22 mixed.
But give me the
6 positive.
But give me IGN's comments.
I gotta find those.
Okay, you'll find them in a second. But anyway, I love this game. And the thing that's really great about this game, and the people who have liked it have said, the story rocks. Go ahead, what's up? You haven't yet?
Not yet.
All right. The story rocks about this game. It's just, there's twists and turns that are great that you'd never expect, or I didn't expect at least. It's interesting. It's compelling. The characters are cool. Now you have it?
I do, yes. IGN's quote on Metacritic is, Ninja Gaiden 3 is a gash on the face of the franchise and one of the worst games the action genre has yet suffered. It's a nightmare that's as easy as it is uninteresting, and it abandons what used to work for awful new ideas that don't work together. Under no circumstance should you ever waste your time on this self-indulgent and abysmal wreck.
Wait a minute. So, Rich, I have a question.
Yes.
Was this game easy?
Not that easy. I played it on normal, and they're like, it's really easy on normal. I played it on normal, and I had to restart certain boss battles 5 or 6 times. I hope I'm not totally embarrassing myself. I hope people out there aren't like,
well,
dude,
what I'm saying is, for Ninja
sucks.
Gaiden, 5 or 6 times is
easy. Yeah, that
easy.
Doesn't sound
no,
like a
it's
lot.
Easier. Oh, they have hard modes. You want to play it on hard? Go play it on hard.
Yeah, but hard mode in Ninja Gaiden is supposed to be like, I'm going to stab my eyeballs out, and that's probably preferable.
Okay, look. This game, the thing that there were really a lot of that complain about is that, you know, it's like somewhat dumbed down. The mechanics that you can just hit one button and win. I didn't find that ever to be the case. And another thing, if there's one fault of this game, it's the presentation doesn't show you the combos. Okay, so if you're playing a single player, if you buy the instruction manual doesn't tell you anything about combos. And the in-game thing and the in-game, like, you know, directions as you're going through tell you nothing about combos. So all it says is light attack is X, strong attack is Y. Go to town. And that's all it ever says. Now, if you play the multiplayer, and the multiplayer is, you know, lame. But if you play the multiplayer where you just basically, it's like a bunch of ninjas in an arena, like, slashing each other. You know, it's really lame. But it's just so they, it was put in there so they could warrant so they could excuse having an online pass to get $9.99 out of certain bilking people for $9.99, whatever. And I'm going to go into other things that aren't good about the game in a minute, but people say the combos, that the game is light, that doesn't have a lot of depth. And if you dig deep, you can find in the multiplayer mode a training mode that teaches you the combos. And once I did that, it has all the same stuff that the other Ninja Gaiden games had. I mean, it's got obliteration moves. I don't know. It is somewhat simplified. I just really enjoyed it. I found it as an 8-hour escapist entertainment. And I really liked it. And everybody's like, it has QuickTime sequences and like talking about how it's like really Ninja Blade 2 instead of Ninja Gaiden 3. Ninja Blade being a really busted game by, I forget, but it was like a Ninja Gaiden clone from 3 years ago that was really bad. Actually, funny story or not funny story, I rented that game when I had the flu and like this really bad stomach bug. So like I went playing that game, got associated with the flu for me. Right.
That's awesome.
So then I tried to play it when I felt better. And like, my stomach would get sick when I'd play it. Isn't that crazy?
It's not fun at all.
Right. Like it's nuts. But anyway, so it's these QuickTime events. They're not really QuickTime events so much as they're like, push these buttons because these are the buttons. See, to me, a QuickTime event is like hit A and then X and then B arbitrarily just to make this cutscene continue. You know what I mean? Whereas these QuickTime events were like, do a dodge move here because your character is about to do a dodge move. You know what I mean? To me, that's better than just a straight, QTE. I don't know how you guys feel about that.
I don't know any QuickTime events that aren't like that, what you just described, though. I can't think of a game that had stuff like that.
God of War. I mean, when you hit the button, it's just a random button.
God of War had stuff where you were doing stuff. It always made sense. I mean, it'd be like, you're either dodging attack or like jumping on someone's head or stabbing them or something.
I don't know. This felt different to me, but I could be wrong. But anyway, I mean, it's got some faults, this game. One big problem with it is that it only has one weapon and one ninpo. Okay, now, and that one magic, basically. In every other game, there's like, at least in Ninja Gaiden 2, there's like 6 weapons. In Ninja Gaiden 1, there's multiple weapons. And that's like a big part of the fun of the game. And then leveling up those weapons is fun. This game just doesn't have that. It just doesn't. And I think that was a big, misstep on their part. The big mission statement was, we wanted to make the story better. We wanted to let you see who Ryu was like behind the mask. And they definitely accomplished that. And that's awesome. But making it more accessible, they just dumbed it down in ways that were unnecessary, like only having one weapon. But then, what are they doing? Releasing DLC weapons.
That's a bit.
Yeah. But the first one's free at least. So I downloaded the first one, and it's these claws. But I mean, if they start releasing more and more DLC weapons, that's going to be a bitch. But and then another thing that's wrong with this game is like there's only 2 modes. Hints on or hints off, right? Like on screen little hints. When you have hints on, every single time you do a certain move, it comes up with the hint. So it's like anytime you have to climb a wall using your little blades, which happens 58 times in the game, it comes up with
It's just an overlay.
Yeah, but it takes up like half the screen and it's a big overlay that says, here's how you climb walls. You know what I mean? And it's got to tell you that every time. But if you turn it off, then you don't see what buttons you need to hit during QTEs.
Wait a minute. You don't see what you need to press in a QuickTime event if you turn off tutorial stuff?
Yes.
These are the kind
of... Which you are making this game sound horrible.
It's
mad fun. It's mad fun.
The
story is fun. What about this? The story is mad fun and really entertaining and twisty, which you know I love a twist. It's got like 5 of them. It's the combat is really fun to play. It's very visceral. It feels like you're really tearing dudes up. I found it challenging, but yet not so bad that I felt frustrated. And it's just an enjoyable action movie, romp. And on that level, I mean, I think the game is just a lot better than people are saying. Here's the thing, though. Famitsu gave it like 9s, dude. Japanese people love this game. So it's just us, and I don't really see what the disconnect is. But it's like Yakuza. Yakuza got good grades, good reviews here too, though. So that's a little different. But
would you say it's
these are just games that Americans just don't seem to get?
Would you say it's almost Dynasty Warrior-esque in that aspect, mm-hmm. in terms of the battle of it?
I would.
Japan loves those just simple, button-mashy. Like you were saying, button mashing just the two for the combos, and that's always been Dynasty Warrior's, playstyle. Yeah. And it always gets big reviews in America or in Japan, but they always hate it in America.
Yeah, I think it definitely has those things in common. I think it definitely does. I think that's an important, interesting distinction for sure. But anyway, so IGN is 1-for-2 on those games.
Well, most people, just not to make it seem like we're picking
threes,
on IGN.
Not threes, though, dude.
I'm just saying, 5.8 average. The Metacritic, there are a couple other people who gave it low scores, too.
Threes?
So. Yeah.
All right.
I'm just saying, both of them are averaging about a 53, 56.
All right. So. All right. I don't know. Okay, not to pick on IGN. Okay. Anyway, I just feel like IGN's been particularly harsh lately. I could be wrong. I played a little more Mass Effect 3, loving it. It's a great game. Enough said. Can't wait till I get to the end, but I'm poking through it so slowly, it's like crazy. And I got a sort of a sleeper one here, Mutant Muds. Have you guys heard of this?
You've told me about it.
Yeah, you were telling me about it.
Dude, Mutant Muds is freaking awesome. What this is a $9 3DS download, and it's like Metroidvania sort of. No, it's not. But it's like a platformer, and it's got like little levels. You go in, and you have to like find secrets, and it's got platforming, and you have a gun, and you jump, and you have a hover pack. It's classic platforming at its best, and it's got 3D where you like jump into the screen, and then you're working in the background, and you're shooting like, oh, it's just really, really fun. So anyway, if you have a 3DS, I highly recommend you download Mutant Muds. And on that note, I think it's time for news.
Cool.
All right.
So I think we'll talk about the Smithsonian in a minute, but why don't you talk about the Better Business Bureau situation, Jordan? Because I can't freaking believe this.
Okay. Well, a few weeks ago, news reporters were saying there was one gamer who had sent into the Better Business Bureau writing, oh, they did false advertising for Mass Effect 3 because you couldn't do everything that they said you could. And so people said no one's going to really take this seriously. Well, the Better Business Bureau did take it seriously, and
I have to object with what you're saying, because I think a lot of people think the Better Business Bureau is like a legal force. It's not. It's a thing that businesses join to basically get information out of it, sort of thing. It's more like, it's not something like they're legally going to be sued and there's going to be a class action lawsuit and they're going to be forced to change it, as much as it is like the official place to register businesses sort of said, here's a slap on the hand.
I know, but it's still – it. I mean, yeah, I know the business because I've had some stuff happen in the past.
Yeah.
Most people probably have. But it's just the fact that they acknowledged this, and it's such a
– it's one of those acknowledgments where it's just like technically yes, but – because, I read – for people who don't know what the situation is, I'm kind of stealing this from Jordan because it pisses me off that this is the case at all and it went to this level, is apparently people are saying that there was false advertisement in Mass Effect 3 because they said you can completely change every aspect of the game in the advertising of it. And the Better Business Bureau says that's not true. You can't change completely every aspect of the game. But from their ruling – that would apply to any game in existence because, in Mario, you can't change the background. So you can't completely change it. So it's so absurd to me.
Yeah. Well, the point in contention here, though, is just, the idea of, you tell people that they're going to have a choice of outcomes and then everybody, and I don't know the ending, but everybody says that you really, certain factor things are going to happen no matter what you ever do. And, that is quote unquote false advertising. But, it's a game. I look at games like art. You're not going to tell Leonardo da Vinci that, like, he tells you how about this? He tells you my painting will evoke, some strong emotions from viewers. You know what I mean? Like, and then people are going to say, it didn't invoke strong emotion in me. False advertising.
Yeah.
That's his art, dude. You know?
But that's not even necessarily the case. Because the Better Business Bureau in their statement isn't saying the ending wasn't adjustable, therefore use false advertising. Like I said, they're saying when you say completely, it needs to be meant literally, as in completely every aspect of it. And that is technically not true. And so that is their contention.
Right, but that's even more ludicrous.
Yeah, exactly. And that's why the entire thing from the Better Business Bureau is just meaningless too. But it's just like, How did it get to this point?
So you're saying this has no legal implications?
No, it has no legal implications.
No, it's just a thing. But it's just one of those things where it's ridiculous that it went to this level.
Yeah.
And also on Mass Effect 3, I don't think it was announced the last time. They have announced BioWare is doing the extended epilogue DLC this summer, which it's not changing the ending. It's extending the story that people felt they didn't get with the other characters. So it's doing epilogue stuff.
Okay, good. So people have two arguments now where they're saying I hated the ending and it didn't conclude a certain threads. Now it's just I hated the ending, but the threads are going to be concluded.
Yes. And I still hold out hope that BioWare is just going to pull back the curtain and show that they had this thing planned, but we'll see on that. So Mass Effect 3 continues to be a
controversial with a capital C, dude.
It really pisses me off that the gaming community is making such a big deal out of this.
Well, okay,
really,
let's not call this the gaming community.
But it is the one doing
a big portion of it.
All right.
I mean, it's split. Some websites have been split by it with their writers. It's just a thing. And I mean, we've all said our opinion on it last time. So
okay. Next up, something that we are a little divided on. Well, at least some circumstances surrounding it, and that is Peter Molyneux leaves Lionhead and joins a company called 22 Cans. Now, when I heard this, I thought this was really significant, groundbreaking news. Jordan, you didn't seem to think so as much.
I just think it means Peter Molyneux will be at a different studio. It's a different studio.
He's not involved in Fable anymore.
Well, no, it doesn't matter. He's just going to raise hype on another game project and then not deliver. So, I mean, I don't really...
Like that's all he does. I mean, like he's
no. I mean, I'm not saying the Fable games are bad. They're all right.
They're good. I mean, Fable 1 and 2 are really good. Fable 3 has problems.
Well, I thought Fable 3 was better than 2, but again, I'm just saying I don't really care about Peter Molyneux, so I have a hard time caring where he is developing.
I'm sort of that way too.
But see, we were talking about this earlier. I'm sorry, Tim. Go ahead.
Of all like game designers who get a lot of hype, I've never understood why Peter Molyneux got such hype.
Because he on the PC, first of all, he was huge with Black and White. He invented
Black and White was never that big on the PC.
No, but what it is, not talking about sales numbers, I'm talking about influential. Like that game was incredibly influential, and a lot of
anything
people cite
Peter
that.
Peter Molyneux did, Sid Meier did first.
Populous. I mean, I don't know. I don't really know the details, so I can't really go into it. All I know is that he's definitely on the top 10 list of most significant. I mean,
no way.
I still think both
maybe
Tim and
20.
I'm talking about, when I say this,
I mean people that I think have like, okay, they say Mickey Mouse is like the most recognizable face like in all the world or something like that. Or, you know, yeah. Some people say that.
Yeah.
I feel that Peter Molyneux is top 10 most visible on the list of most visible celebrity, one might say, game designers.
I mean, if that's your personal list, that's fine. But
it's not my personal list. It's my statement that I think it's truth.
I don't agree with that.
I don't agree with that either.
All right.
It's one of the things where it's.
I do think he's very.
I think
visible.
He's up there with. Or go ahead, Jordan.
Oh yeah, I think he's very visible. I think, you know, like Tim was saying, maybe top 20, but I think overall, in terms of designers I know and designers who have kind of made a big. I mean, I think of people like Reggie Fils-Aimé before I think of Peter Molyneux in terms
even
of
though
like visibility.
Even though
and
Reggie Fils-Aimé never made a freaking game. I'm talking about developers, bro.
No, that's what I'm saying.
I put him on terms with Ed Boon and John Tobias, the people who made Mortal Kombat.
Oh my God, no.
Yeah, because those people were
no
significant.
Way.
But yeah, I put
They're
him on
so
that.
So far below Molyneux.
No way.
Oh my God. Tobias and Boon?
Yeah.
Are you for Boon?
Yeah.
You're crazy.
Seriously, what's wrong with them?
There's nothing wrong with them, but as far as visibility,
Mortal Kombat changed all of how we changed gaming, man. If you're talking about visibility and someone changing gaming,
no, I'm talking about visibility of a personality, of a person.
I don't think he's that big.
Oh my God, dude. If you watch GDC, if you watch E3 on TV, any of that coverage, he's one of the five dudes they give the most talking time to. And I've watched the shit out of that
stuff. Well, that doesn't necessarily mean he's big as much as he is. Maybe he's a person who likes to talk to the press a lot.
Exactly. Visibility.
But that doesn't mean he's done anything influential or great. It just means
he
talks to people.
He also has done a lot of influential and great things, but
I don't know. It's just.
But I'm putting him on my visibility list.
I'm just saying if we were to, after the podcast, sit here and try to bang out 10 people, I think Tim and I would come up with 10 people.
That I would agree. Okay. I don't know. I like, for example, I think he's, you know, right. I think he's about on par with a Hideo Kojima as far as fame.
You think so? Hideo Kojima's been around for so long, though.
I think he's I would say Kojima in terms of fame, because he's always...
Yeah, maybe a little higher. Maybe a little higher. People
especially
give him
on the
so
level
much
that,
cred.
Think of it like this. When you hear Kojima's name, you think, okay, that game's going to be awesome. When you hear Molyneux's name, you go, he's going to say
what
stuff.
What about Zone of the Enders?
Zone of the Enders is a good game.
Yeah.
I never really blew up, but I like Zone of the Enders.
I played it. I liked it.
Really?
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. That's cool.
Zone
of the Enders,
FTW,
baby. I'd
maybe put him with Tim Schafer, you know?
For the win, Zone of the Enders.
Tim Schafer's not, you know, one of the top five of all time, but he's got a unique aspect to his games where you can definitely say, this is a Peter Molyneux game.
Let me say this.
This is a Tim Schafer game.
Tim Schafer, in recent years, is coming up on that list recently.
I still want to put Tim Schafer in the top five, even top 10, maybe.
No, I'd say top 20, but he's moving up that list. And, you know, and you have to understand, like, this list doesn't necessarily mean merit. Like, this is just people that people know of, that people give credit to, whether it's deserving in our opinion or not.
I think this is the kind of thing where the three of us are just going to keep going around.
Yeah,
and
but
this
I mean,
is the
kind I think of thing you is, could say the same thing of like Paris Hilton. We'd
have to define terms and really get down to it. So let's agree to disagree on this one for now. But no matter how you look at it, I think it's significant that he's leaving Lionhead. I'm disappointed. I would have liked to have seen him maybe finally and come out with Fable 4 and actually bring, you know, some of his vision to fruition that he's been, you know, all this craziness, like trees will be planted in the first in the when you're a kid, and then you'll see a forest grown up in when you're an adult. You know what I mean? That never happened. You know what I mean? And that's just like, and that's just, you know, to use the analogy, a seedling of the bullshit that he spouted. But because of these crazy antics and histrionics, his profile is just huge. Anyway.
Yeah.
Anyway. You see how I got the last word on that one?
Yeah, you got the last word in there. I'm just going to let you keep the last word.
Go for it. What's next?
Oh, okay. MPD numbers. I thought this was interesting. It's not necessarily news, but these are two games that I've played and really liked. The 3DS, we don't hear much about how well games do or don't sell for 3DS, but Kid Icarus last month sold 140,000 copies. And surprisingly to me, Resident Evil Revelations sold 122,000. Which blows my mind that it's up there with Kid Icarus, honestly.
Is that world or U.S.?
I don't know. Okay. NPD, I think, is domestic. I think it's U.S.
Okay.
Okay.
Pretty sure. I'm not impressed with that, because I always just think of, you know, Modern Warfare sold like 10 million. So that's almost 100
well,
times.
Oh, well, sure.
Well,
sure.
I mean, I think for a handheld that has a limited current install base.
Let me give you an example.
360 or PS3.
Let me give you an example. Binary Domain sold 20,000. That sci-fi shooter that's sort of gone off the radar a little bit. That, like, Sega's most recent, like, flagship title, if they have such a thing. Anyway.
Go
ahead.
If you're going to bring up NPD numbers, I thought this was interesting.
Resident
Evil 6 date got moved up, which is something you don't hear about a lot, is that the date got moved up by about 6 weeks to October 2nd.
Is it really 6 weeks difference?
I mean, it was about the middle of November, and now it's the beginning of October.
Yeah, I want to say it was November 16th, wasn't it?
Yeah, about that.
When is Bioshock Infinite?
October.
Yeah,
see, I'm going to be so busy with that.
A lot of people going for the October release right now.
It's going to be a busy month. But the other cool thing, because we were having this.
Somebody was telling me today, video game sales last month were down 25%.
Because nothing really big came out last
month. It is a
month.
Down month, man. Go ahead.
But yeah, the other thing, I remember when we first kind of were talking about Resident Evil 6, we argued about this a little, is that the most recent Resident Evil 6 trailer showed that all three protagonists are going to meet up at different points throughout the campaign, because they're going to intersect. Chris and Leon are going to have a fight. So
what?
Just a little thing that I feel. Yeah, so that's going to happen.
All right. Well, a little I told you so. You heard
what's
it
your
first.
Problem with that one?
I dislike crossovers that feel the force for the purpose of crossovers. And that feels forced to me.
I think it. They're building.
Yeah,
I
but
think
you want
if they
your
wrote
game
the story
have,
in the sense that these three.
But if
yeah,
one's
you want
be,
your
you
game
know,
to have cohesion,
in
though,
China,
Tim.
And another one's in America somewhere.
You know those games are globetrots, dude.
Again,
you,
it's not necessarily going to be
those
that it's
going
to be one time. It
no,
could skip months. It
no,
could
those games.
Up.
Those games are globetrots, man. What they always do is they go to a certain facility and they find out like some secret project that's going on in Antarctica. So then, like, the facility in Europe has just given them info that they need to follow up in Antarctica. And then, you know, Leon could have been in the U.S. doing something with the president and found out the same news about Antarctica, and then they both go there and meet up, you know, or whatever. And I mean, it's Resident Evil. It's going to be freaking, you know, far-fetched. I mean,
but it sounds to me that they're trying to expand it too much, and it's just going to kind of flop as a result.
Well, they are trying to throw the kitchen sink in it.
That's what I'm worried about.
And when you talk about like doing that, Arkham City is an example. I think you'll agree with me, Jordan, is a game that they threw the kitchen sink in to great detriment to the series. I mean, that game has everything.
That is a game I do want to go back to, though, just because I feel like maybe.
Oh, I finished it, and when I got to the end, and I got every Joker trophy. So like, I mean, Riddler trophy. So I mean, I finished it. And it is the freaking everything. Everyone and his mom is in that game. So,
but yeah, we'll see with Resident Evil 6. I mean, October should be a good month.
Oh, I can't wait, dude. Those are two of the most anticipated games ever for me. I mean, Bioshock Infinite. Like, I have to play that game before I die. And after I play it, it might be okay if I just like drift away. Totally serious, man. Last thing we're going to talk about is a little callback to Fez. Yay, it finally came out, right?
Yay!
All right, a little more excitement for Fez. It's getting great reviews.
It is, yes.
Joystick gave it a 5 out of 5. Eurogamer a 10 out of 10. Game Informer 9.5, and someone else gave it a 9.5.
It's been getting great reviews.
Yeah. I think it's, you said Game Rankings was something like 9.
I think it was 92.3 or something like that.
Yeah. That's pretty awesome. Yeah. So anyway, Phil Fish has nothing to worry about. Can you imagine how relieved that guy must be?
Oh my God. Yeah.
It's probably been a rough day for him in terms of just waiting on sales, because in the end, his review scores could be great. If he personally doesn't get the sales, it's going to be a terrible day.
Totally.
But I don't know.
I got to think he's going to get decent sales with that as well, though.
Oh, yeah, I think
in terms of independent games, you know, he's going to make his money back, you know.
It may not be the next Meat Boy, but it may be. Anyway, so... last weekend or 2 weekends ago, Tim and I went up to DC to see the Smithsonian exhibit, The Art of Video Games. And to say the least, it was a tremendous letdown.
I don't think that's a fair statement to say.
It wasn't
a
letdown.
I don't think we're the group that's supposed to be advertised to.
Okay, but I was let down.
I mean, I could say that personally, but I don't think it's fair to say the thing itself is a letdown. I think we're not the market. I think the market is for people unfamiliar with games.
I absolutely agree with you, but I think that it's called The Art of Video Games.
Or exactly.
It should have art. Instead, it had a whole room devoted to a history of the consoles. And the only thing that was in there that was like actual authenticness, it was fair to say. All that had that in there, the only artifacts in this museum were the systems, as if they were, I mean, they're not art. I mean, you could argue that they are, but...
They also had like 2 or 3 minute videos of the games that they thought were the best from that system and explaining the art.
They didn't explain the art. They just talked a little about development.
You got videos playing Shadow of the Colossus, videos playing Flower, showing Halo 2, showing Wind Waker.
We were in and out in 30 minutes, dude.
Well, yeah, because we'd seen all that stuff. I mean, for me, it was just like, I've seen everything in here. I was looking for something new, and that definitely wasn't there for me.
See, okay, I think it's important to mention. Okay, first of all, I want to preface all that I'm saying by, I think it's awesome that there's an exhibit at the Smithsonian about video games, period. That's awesome. That said, Jordan, myself, you, Tim, or somebody that knows half as much as any of us about video games could have curated a better show.
No, I don't think that's fair.
Oh, my God. You don't think you could have curated a better show? You don't think you could have curated a better show?
I don't know anything about curating as an exhibit, so I'm not going to make that statement.
Okay, well, let me just say, if I were curator... Here's what that show would be. That show would have, I would call up all the game developers, most of whom are extremely excited about the Smithsonian becoming this, you know, having a display of video game stuff as art. You know, the developers all over, I see it all over the internet, are super, super excited about this. I'd call them all up and I'd say, send me all of the, you know, all of your art assets. Send me, you know, I want to see, you know, design documents on how you make this art. You know, I want to see, like, you know, original art pieces in frames. I mean, just all the actual art. It's called The Art of Video Games. And there was so little art there, Tim.
There was a lot of art. The entire first room was...
The first room had like 10 pictures in it.
The first room had more than 10 pictures in it. It had a lot of... just straight concept art from games,
like,
as well,
like,
as
literally
having a huge screen showing
like two clusters of 10 pictures
of
each, man. It was so light on content, man.
I disagree.
And it was so, and okay, how about this? So like there were these two clusters of like pictures. It wasn't original art. It was all reproductions. And these clusters were like the first one had like of the 10 pictures shown, and I have the picture of this on my iPhone. Of the 10 pictures shown, like three of them are Metal Gear Solid, it's sporadically placed. Like it had no, there was no rhyme or reason to any of it. It was so incohesive. I don't know.
I was saying, we're not the target audience, and that's what I realized when I was there. Is like, but we're not the target audience for this.
Again, I wasn't there, but I know Rich came and he was very, you know, kind of like this when he told me about it. To me, it seems like he gets the idea that it wasn't necessarily for us. I think he would have liked it if it wasn't as shallow as he feels it was in terms of what it was presenting.
Well, I agree with that. And that's why I say it's not for us because we eat, sleep, and drink video games.
No, but I want the average person.
Yeah, I think what he's saying is that he wants an exhibit that might give some sense of that to the average person.
You're not going
to
get
the
that
passion,
very easily.
The
and
I'm art.
Gonna, I mean, have you ever tried to get a person who's never played games to really love games?
Okay, so then why are you saying this display is for those people and that there's any value because in trying to appeal to those people? And then on the other hand, saying that, why bother? Because those people don't give a shit.
No, that's not what I just said.
Okay.
What I said is, have you ever tried to get someone to have that love of games that we have? You can't do
no,
it. You can't impose it.
No, I know that.
And so what you're talking about would be something for us where you would impose that love of games and have that appeal.
No, I want you to represent
Let me finish.
Okay.
Let me finish.
Yeah, man.
And so for us, that's what we would love. We would love all this obscure stuff that we get, and we get that it's obscure because we know the basis of it, and then we recognize that it's obscure. For the average person, what they were seeing there was obscure. But that's familiar with us. That's everyday knowledge for us. You know, we've got the PhDs. They're people coming in from high school.
Yeah.
Well, okay. And that's why for us, you know, it's going to seem shallow, but that's why I say we're not the audience for it. It's for people who aren't familiar with it.
Okay.
And if you got too much at first,
okay,
it's going to be overwhelming.
So what games do they put on display? They had four or five games on display
in
the second
games
room.
Play,
and here's what they were. Escape from Monkey Island on a 2-minute loop. Secret of Monkey Island, whatever. Yeah. On a 2-minute loop. So you could play 2 minutes of a a graphic-based adventure game. That's impossible. And then, oh, what do you got? What's next? Myst. Great. Flower, good choice.
Yeah.
Super Mario Brothers, good choice. Pac-Man, good choice. But two of the five games that they're showing people are completely inaccessible in the museum setting.
I agree with that. Those are choices I do not understand at all. Because they're not accessible and they artistically weren't that interesting, I think.
I think my main question to you, Tim, is that I mean, I agree that it's not an exhibit for us.
Yeah.
I mean, I do agree with that. But if it's not trying to convey some sense of why we love it, what's the value people who don't know anything about are going to get? If all they're seeing is just kind of a surface level sort of, and then they go about
it. It's trying to convey it, but it's, you know, it's introductory. Like I said, it's a person coming in from high school being introduced to games. It's not going to be the people who are eating, drinking, sleeping.
But that's why I think that if you had concept art and you had a big display up on the wall with a big like a big video screen in the middle of a developer explaining their process of how they bring this art to fruition in games, and then all around it, all the concept art to back that up.
But then you'd be focusing specifically on one game.
Okay,
and
in
they
one
had
little
stuff
section.
Like that talking about that on different stuff.
In one little section. I mean, I'm talking take a seminal game like a Mario or something like that.
And they had that sort of stuff.
They had like the evolution of jumping, man.
They had a person talking about storylines with games. They had a person talking about artistic games. And any one of the games that you clicked on and watched sort of stuff, they'd go into detail.
And I was in there trying to find value in those little videos.
Well, that's the thing. We already know this stuff.
I think what Rich wants, and this is a different medium, but I think what he would have preferred is something along the lines of Indie Game the Movie, where it's the sort of thing where even if someone's never played a game, mm-hmm. they can come in and see this story. I think what we want is that there are people making this stuff as art. There are people who are pouring their passion into it in a way that, you know, just seeing the finished product doesn't quite get across. And I think that might be what Rich was.
Thank you, man.
I mean,
and the exhibit was passionless. And it was three stinking rooms. Okay, now I understand, said, that they're that's all they got.
One of the reasons I don't like you saying it's passionless and the curator's nervous is because I've talked to the curator for a extended amount of time. The guy's not an idiot, and the guy loves games, and the guy has passion. So don't say it's not passionless, because that's not true.
It comes across as passionless.
That's because we have such a huge passion. We are expecting the huge explosion. And it's not going to be that because it's not for us.
I just don't understand why he made those decisions he made, man.
I don't understand the Super Monkey Island and Myst one, but the other ones I can understand. My other big complaint is every single one that we're showing off should have had its own TV as opposed to each system having a TV. That was my other big complaint is they should have had individual TVs for each game.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't know. I mean, now you make me feel bad talking about this curator, but I mean, I got to have my opinion, man.
I know, but I'm just saying it's just like.
I mean, I feel, you know, I don't want to rip on the, I'm not trying to rip on the guy. I feel like that the mission statement was misguided. I agree with you that it should be for the average person who wants to come in because that's more obviously who's going to be coming. The mass is coming through the Smithsonian. And also, you know, on a selfish level, you know, I'd like to have more people get into games and see what's great about games, you know, that aren't already
into
them.
But this is what's going to get
them into it. But see, I don't think it's effective at it, even for a baseline. I mean, just because I'm super passionate about video games and know a ton about them doesn't mean that I can't predict what I think would be good to get people into games. And we disagree on what that is.
Well, it's just a thing of I've tried to get people getting into games who haven't played games before. And I've tried to go that very passionate route because I'm super passionate.
Right.
And it always throws them off.
But do you think that display, I agree with you, but do you think that exhibit did it?
I don't know.
Okay. All right.
But like I said, it's not for us.
And I completely agree with you. And I also say that I think it's awesome that it exists. And I'm not trying to say that I wish it weren't there because it's so crappy or something. No. And I did, you know, the 30 minutes I spent there, I learned a couple things. I know it's not for me, or, you know, blah, blah, blah. I get that. But I just think it's called the Art of Video Games, and I wanted to see more art.
Let me ask you something.
It's really that simple.
When they've got an Art of Van Gogh, are you going to leave knowing, you know, a person with a master's degree information on the Art of Van Gogh, or are you just going to have introductory level information on it now?
Well, no, but I didn't feel like there was art focused on.
I don't see how you could say that. I mean, because they had concept art. They had every single non-portable-based system where they took four distinct games from that had distinctive art styles that they could display information of, and then you could learn about it. I mean, I don't understand how you can say that statement.
Yeah.
And so I don't know. I just don't think it's fair. I just think, like we were saying before, we're not the target audience for it. It's more introductory for people who aren't affiliated with it, so they can now get a glimpse of it and realize, oh, here's something I never realized before. I think of a person who is not affiliated with video games. They see Shadow of the Colossus. They see Okami. They see Flower. They're going to have a different perspective on games afterwards. Because they didn't know that existed. And now they do.
Okay. I mean, you know.
It's breadth, not depth.
Yeah. I see that room as being about the consoles, not about the games. Mm-hmm. I just see it differently. But, I mean, you know, when you bring it onto a personal level and you talk about this dude, I mean, what does this guy say about it? You interviewed him, right?
Well, I mean, I invited him to MAGFest, and so he did a thing where we talked about all of his sort of decisions and stuff with it.
Give me some insight.
I mean, I only talked for like an hour. I'm not going to talk to be an expert on the Smithsonian sort of stuff with it. I'm not, like I said, I don't know anything about curating your exam, so I don't think it's fair to say that we could curate it better ever, because it's just a statement that, you know, we know nothing about curating. We don't know what has to store to those things. I should have used the word curating.
I feel like I could have done a better job at giving an overview of games the art of video games to people, personally.
It's a very, very large task to undertake. And I can understand why some of the choices that he made to make it a little more generalized, I think, and get a bigger breadth of stuff with it than, you know, really concretely about one thing specific. But I think if you're going to have something as that specific like you would want, Rich, where you'd have the big TV focusing about the one game, you'd need like 20 rooms, which they're not going to give you.
Well, maybe that's what I wish, you know?
That's the sort of thing. It's just like...
Maybe that's what I want, though. Maybe I think that, if you're going to do the Art of Video Games, I mean, I don't know. I just thought it felt so... It was almost like... I'm not going to say it's worse than if it existed, but it almost, to me, it was like, boy, like, if you're going to do this, do it. And they didn't give them the... Maybe that is it. Maybe that is it, Tim. Maybe it does come right down to the fundamental aspect of they wanted to get what they wanted to accomplish and the space provided.
You got practicality issues. You got, you know, maybe who that you're appealing is it. To sort of
because you said because you got the because you do have the matter and I you know I see your side on this a little bit because I do see the you know because all the concept art that I wanted more of. You're right. They did have spatterings of it, and I guess it's just a size you know a space issue. that if they're, you know, it's just, I just wish that I could have seen more art.
This wasn't going to be E3 just Art of Games. It was just going to be, you know, I would have liked it to be a little bigger,
see that.
Sort of stuff like that. I was kind of surprised by a little bit how small it was. But I thought, you know, given what they had, I thought they did a decent job with it.
Okay. I mean, I hear that.
But anyway, we've gone off topic a lot.
Yeah. But anyway, I definitely think that if you're in the area, it's definitely worth stopping by and checking out. Just to see what your opinion is on it. And maybe what decisions you would have made differently, or if you think that, you know, I don't know. I guess we'll just leave it at that. So speaking of crappy things, bad games. No, I'm just kidding. No, anyway, we're gonna talk about bad games now, or what makes a game a bad game, and do we ever like bad games, and can you ever truly make a campy video game?
Yeah, we all kind of came into this discussion with different ideas about what we wanted to talk about, but I think we all kind of have our own kind of style of what kind of games we can tolerate, what we're looking for, if we're willing to play bad games. And I am probably, of the three of us, the most willing to sit through a bad game.
He's the kind of guy who, he picks up Mindjack, Morphex, Amy, Hydrophobia.
Yeah.
Just to see what all the fuss is about, right?
Well, if I see a game gets, you know, 6, 5, you know, mediocre scores, I see that and I go, okay, it's
Ooh,
just...
Oh, Velvet
it's just,
Assassin.
See, yeah. But even then, I don't want to say that's a bad game. I'd say that's like a
two-star
movie.
No, that's what I'm
movie,
saying.
You know?
That's it's just, yeah. It's there. It's not necessarily offensively. What I'm saying is when I see a game getting scores like 3 or 2 or just and 3 or 2 in a 10 score scale, when I'm seeing things get bottom of the barrel scales, I can't help but be fascinated by how could a project go so wrong that it is this, because most of the time, you just don't see games getting, even games that most people agree are terrible, don't get rated that low. I mean, like we were saying, I mean, Project Raccoon Rex is averaging a 56. It's not the worst possible Metacritic score, but a lot of people are saying it's awful. But when it's kind of one of those across the board, people are just bashing it, I get interested.
Well, I think another one way to look at this is what you were saying earlier, Tim, is comparing it to one of the nearest comparable art forms, and that is movies, and more specifically campy movies, B movies, and then also you were talking about what, Troll 2, the quintessential.
Right.
Why don't you tell a little bit about what you meant with all that?
My question with this is, there are some movies or some books or some TV shows that are so bad on every level that they become laughably good. And what I wonder, is it possible to do that with a game?
Are you talking about the ones that are intentionally so?
Some are intentionally so, because they understand camp.
Like
then,
Leprechaun or...
Well, Leprechaun's not that way.
Okay.
Leprechaun is just bad, but it's not camp. I mean, like Troll 2, it's like the cutting is horrible, the dialogue is horrible, everything about it is horrible. And it's just like, it doesn't have a single redeeming quality. I mean, there's actually a documentary made about the Troll 2 and how it was made, and like... they found a dentist to be the star of it. And like you listen to the writer, and she said that she wrote it because she was angry at her vegetarian friends and so wanted to make a movie where the monsters were also vegetarians to like make a jab at them. And I'm not making that up.
And they said that with a straight face.
They said it with a straight face. And that's what I'm talking about.
What about Stan Helsing? Does that qualify?
No, Stan Helsing is just dumb. That's supposed to be dumb, laughable parody. It's not camp. Camp is like, it's so amazingly bad that it's good.
Purposely?
No. I mean, you can do purposely because you got things like Planet Terror or Black Dynamite. Those are purposefully camp and those are personally good. But so many movies have done that before where that wasn't intentional. And so that I find amazing. And so my question there is, can you do that with a game?
And see, when you bring that up, the first thing that I think of, and I think maybe you agree with me on this, Jordan, is Deadly Premonition.
That I think is the most, again, you know, Tim was looking it up earlier and he got kind of pissed at he doesn't like the Guinness Book of World Records Gamers Edition.
I hate that thing.
But, you know, they put it as the most critically polarizing survival horror game. IGN gave it a 2. Destructoid gave it a perfect 10. I think it was Destructoid. I don't want to misspeak, but I'm pretty sure it was them. And yet it has gone on to have one of the biggest cult followings for a game. Because it has busted mechanics, it's
yeah, all the mechanics in the whole game are broken.
Graphically horrifying, not horrifying, but graphically just outdated.
PS2 era.
For a 360 game. The score rarely matches the actual stuff going on in scenes, but the story's really good. And
it's compelling, but even the story is over the top and nuts.
Yeah.
But yet compelling, and the characters actually have depth.
It's weird. In a way
it's like if in a word, it's juxtaposition.
It makes it so that I don't mind slogging through terrible gameplay to have fun. Because I think with gameplay, a lot of times people think, okay, it's a game. The gameplay should be good. If it's broken gameplay, it's not necessarily going to be a good game, which I'm not saying I agree with, but a lot of people kind of think, okay, it's a video game. Shouldn't it just be there to be fun to play?
Well, that's my sort of thing about broken gameplay. Let me say something here. I want to say one of the biggest reasons why I think it's not possible to have a campy video game is in a movie or a television show, whether something's bad or not, it continues on. That is not the case for a video game. Because if something's so bad that you can't play it, you can't continue on.
Okay, I mean, I'm not talking about buggy mess kind of you can't go any further.
I'm not saying like a buggy mess, but if something is so like, for example, I want to think of one game that you could maybe do it with. There was a game called, I don't remember, I think it was Kabuki Warriors, and it was an Xbox game.
God.
And it was supposed to be like the worst fighting game ever made. And one of the things I remember description for it was like, the player did better by taking the controller and literally banging it on their ass. Because it worked just as well as trying to actually do the moves. And so what I'm saying is in that aspect, I think it'd have to be that bad to be that good to be, you know, a campy game.
Well, I mean, I think that, again, you know, bringing up comparison to movies or stuff, I think a lot of times story kind of comes into that, that even when a game is so bad that it's not necessarily the most fun to play, which, again, going back to Deadly Premonition, not necessarily fun mechanically to play, but the story was campy in the sense that it was taking horror tropes, and it was doing really, like, again, he would be talking about how he would come across a murder scene and, you know, the guy had used skulls as utensils, like bowls and done stuff like that, but it had this like jazz music playing in the background.
Yeah, and not to mention, don't forget that every time you were in the car driving around, and by the way, the car driving mechanics were the worst yet. It's the worst driving you've ever had in a game. And you know, the one thing that was cool about the game is it had all kinds of power-ups and finding new weapons, and you could actually get upgrades for your car, and there were side quests that were
fun.
Yeah,
and that's the thing.
And all that was really cool.
Even beyond the main story, I was still playing that game to get all of the collectibles in it because I just liked the world. I liked unlocking
it
the best
car in the game. It actually was great at
world
building. Yeah. But what I was going to say is when you're driving in the car for the majority of the game, he's talking to his imaginary friend/alter ego about his favorite movies, and they're like weird movies, ones you'd never think of. It's really interesting. And so like in that way, it almost it is what you're saying, Tim. It buys into its own campiness. Like it knows, and a lot of the movies it's talking about are like busted movies. So in a way, it's like a guy who like thinks like you do about film to some extent, Tim, or at least or at least brings up these kind of questions, is making this game, is at the helm.
I think going beyond that, I think what I was thinking when I say bad games can still be fun is that sometimes games get one aspect of them, or because the gameplay isn't necessarily the best or it isn't polished. You know, a lot of times critics will come down harshly on things, but then I'll pick it up and it's still really fun. There's something to it that is compelling me to play, like Earth Defense Force 2017 for 360 is ugly, mechanically simplistic. There's no real variety in most of the goals. But is it fun to play with a friend? Yes.
Well, see, then I say it works, you know? I mean, that's not a bad game then.
But it is. Mechanically and graphically and polish-wise, there's a lot of problems with it. But it's the kind of thing where it's so laughable.
Well, that game actually is an example, though, of what Tim's talking about. Because it's like it came from outer space themed, Tim. Have you played that game?
Well, that's not what I'm saying with camps. What I think makes camp, in terms of what I'm saying here, is something that the joy you get out of it is in ridiculing it.
Okay, yeah, I do that too. Like, I got gamey for that specific reason.
I mean, that's like the only joy you get out of it. It's not like, oh, this is kind of fun, but it's kind of stupid. But it's like, this is so bad,
but see, I feel that way.
It's so fun to make fun of
it. I feel that way about Stan Helsing, even though it was intending to be a comedy.
Well, that's sort of thing, but that sort of thing.
So bad at
you can
kind of
say Stan Helsing's camp, but it's just like, it's obvious parody, you know?
But it's supposed so to be bad like, at even
okay,
being a parody.
I kind of get a better idea of what you're saying, is that there is no redeeming quality necessarily. It's
not
like,
not a single one, and it's so fun to put it down. It's like picking on a person you know can't fight back if you were a bully. Damn. That's the appeal of camp.
I can provide an example of that that just came a few weeks ago. Like I was telling you about, I think last time I've been, you know, I played Amy for the 360 and maybe PS3.
Yeah, what the hell is
it's
that?
It's a downloadable survival horror title. You play as a woman who has just gotten this girl from somewhere who has some mental issues. And then a zombie outbreak happens and you have to escort her through the whole game. And it plays terribly. The combat is lame. The story is awful. The first character you come across who joins up with you pretty much acts like a pedophile the whole time. He's not, but you just go, he is going to inappropriately touch somebody at some point. And it's just, it's awful. But I was playing it with Adam and laughing at that game was fun. I didn't want to play it, but I wanted to see what happened next so that I could see what other horrible things. And there are other games like that where stuff like that is kind of happening.
Well, maybe I should ask a more precise question. Do you think it's possible to have gameplay itself that is so laughably bad that you would continue to keep playing it? Pure gameplay, no story elements in here at all.
If it were pure gameplay, no. I don't think there's a lot. I mean, there are moments of bad gameplay that are funny. Like I played Damnation once, and characters would be climbing walls, but they wouldn't just like climb. They would hang by their backwards hands and then do backflips up onto the wall.
Dude, that game is so aptly titled.
Yeah, I mean, it's so there are I think there are moments of gameplay, but I think when you're talking about gameplay, you get to a point where it's not like a movie or a book where things are changing. I think with gameplay, if it's going to stay the same all the time, then you make fun of it once, and then you really can't make fun of it again.
That's what I'm sort of saying, though, and that's why I say I don't think it's possible. Because like with the movies or the books, or not books so much, but like with the books or a television show, it goes on and it continues to show you how horrible it is. But with horrible gameplay, if it's so horrible that it's unplayable, where it's just like you can't really do anything, where if you try to do anything, it's going to take an hour or so, you're going to get so frustrated that you're not going to be able to laugh at it anymore.
Well, I'm just saying that when you're talking about gameplay, if you see a gameplay element, then you've seen it. It's like once you see the bad movie, you've seen all that movie has to offer. You might show that to a friend because, okay, this is fun. I think you could do the same with the gameplay and be like, okay, look at this. This is a horrible gameplay mechanic, but look at how funny it is. I don't think it doesn't necessarily have the longevity that you're going to do it for an hour and a half, but I think if you've seen all it has to offer, then and it's still laughably bad that you're going to want to show it to people. But I don't think it necessarily has to be gameplay. And again, I'm not necessarily talking about camp. I'm more talking about just bad games.
I think if I had to like define what we're coming to here, it's that a game, you know, to be the equivalent of a campy film, the kind of campy you're talking about, where it's so bad you laugh at it. The mechanics can't be what's bad.
Exactly. And that's why I say it's impossible to do it.
The content can be, though. It's impossible to do it 100%, but the content itself, the visuals, the story can be that bad. So in that way it's equivalent, because all a movie is the story, the content, the visuals. Mm-hmm. But the game part, you're absolutely right.
But again, I'm not saying I care if it's campy or not. Again, I think your opinion's valid.
I'm just wondering if it's possible, and I'm convinced that it's still impossible.
Oh, explain what you don't like about the Guinness Gaming Records. That was interesting, man.
This is, you know, sort of tangential, but I was going on a tangent about this earlier. Is the Guinness Book of World Records for gaming is the stupidest shit in the world?
And is that because it's arbitrary?
Yeah, they're like, here's a game. We need to make a world record for this game so we can mention it in the Guinness Book of World Records to look like we have gamer cred. Like, they have an award for the highest selling 3D fighting game, 3D weapon-based fighting game. Now, I can only name three 3D-based weapon fighting games, one of which was Mace, which was a fun game. The other one was Battle Arena Toshinden.
You are not fucking around,
which was
dude.
And the other one, Soul Calibur. Well, actually, remember that. The award was Series. 3D weapon-based series.
Oh, my bad. Now we're down to two.
Yeah, and so it's just like, yeah, you got the world record for, you know, three people. It's like, wow.
You got the world record for being Soul Calibur.
Yeah, exactly.
I have the world record here for having the longest hair of the person on this podcast.
That's true.
The equivalent of the world records that they give people.
Well, hey, let's take this to another level, and let's talk about, okay, we've been talking about all about modern games. What about old Nintendo games that suck? Like, for example, Who Framed Roger Rabbit or Fester's Quest or Friday the 13th, Texas Chainsaw Massacre, any of the Simpsons games. Oof. Some people say TMNT. Some people say Battletoads.
No, Battletoads is great.
Some people like them. Some people hate them. But, either way you look at it, what do we have to say about these games?
I think that what I was saying earlier with stuff like that is that when I was a kid, I was a kid in the 90s. I know you guys were the 80s mostly because I had a Genesis. But it was the same kind of idea of, when you got a game as a kid, when we were kids, you weren't going to be able to go, game sucks, let's go to GameStop and get a new one.
You played it.
So if you got a terrible game, you got good at that terrible game.
Yeah. Dude, let me give you a case in point. There used to be this store called Best. I don't know if they still have these in the country, but it's like a service merchandise, which is also not around anymore. But it's like what you do is you go in the store and you pick out an item, and then you tell a sales associate you want to buy that item. And then you go up to the front and pay, and then the item comes up on a conveyor belt at the front of the store. Because everything's in the warehouse in the back, every fucking thing. So anyway, I saw a sale, $19.99 or $29.99 for your choice, Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles or The Adventures of Bayou Billy.
No.
Right?
See, I think that's a hard choice legitimately because they're both great games.
Okay, Bayou Billy is not a great game.
It's a tough game.
It's so hard. But I go there and I wanted Ninja Turtles and they didn't have it. They were out. So that warehouse little conveyor belt came up empty, man. And I was disappointed. So I had to go for Bayou Billy because I wasn't going to go there with my mom with her ready to buy a video game and leave with nothing. You know what I mean? That just wasn't going to happen. So because I was wanted to be playing something that night, damn it. So I got Bayou Billy. Remember that? Do you remember the way that intro sounds?
It was Adventures of Bayou Billy. <Yeah. laughs>
My favorite one of those was Blades of Steel. Blades of Steel.
Why did it have to sound so muffled?
Because the sound quality was horrible.
It's kind of like Elizabeth Taylor. Every time you see a commercial for her, selling perfume, there's 15 filters on the camera, so it's blurry, so you can't see what she actually looks like. It's similar to that, I think.
Bigfoot.
The sampling rate on this sound is so low that we have to muffle it so you can't tell just how horrendous it is.
Okay, so you played by? Did you play it a lot?
Yes, I played it a lot because I had it, and I died so many times.
Because that's how NES games got longevity. If they weren't that hard, they would have been done in 10 minutes.
They weren't long, they were hard.
I felt the same way with a lot of the Genesis games I have. Were there terrible games I played? Yeah. One of the games I got was Animaniacs for the Genesis, which was a pretty busted game, but I played it so much, because that's what I had. And yet, there's still some part of me that goes, I can't get rid of the fact that I have technically fond memories of playing that game.
Yeah, yeah. By all definitions, they are fond memories. I have those for Who Framed Roger Rabbit. That game is freaking horrendous. But boy, do I have some great nostalgia for it. I mean, that game's horrible.
I mean, it makes me wonder if there are kids today getting really crappy games.
No, it's a thing that's dawned for us because we didn't know. I mean, maybe no, it's probably still around because they still got those, crappy knockoff games that when a parent goes there for Christmas, they're I could buy Mario for $60, or I could buy this obvious crappy knockoff for $20 because I don't know anything about games. I'll buy this for my kid, and they won't know that.
For example, there's a whole company called UFO that makes Wii crapware.
Yeah.
They make nothing but $20 Wii pieces of shit. seriously, and they're knockoffs of real games, like Chicken Quest. You ever seen that one? And all this kind of crap. And it's just like you said, Tim, that mom goes in there and they're like, what's the difference? It's just a video game. They're all stupid.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, no, that's stupid. You know, that's awesome.
But I don't know. I find it interesting. I mean, since we're just talking about NES games and sort of you're talking about how difficult they were, how with a lot of NES games, the only memories that people really have are the first three boards. Because with Battletoads, there's that ice board, which I got once or twice. But you ask me what happens afterwards, I'm like, I don't know. I think there's a snake board and a board with rats, but I've never gone to
that. That was the triumph of Contra. Konami was smart enough to know, give people a 30-man code. Because if you don't, nobody's going to see any second two-thirds of that game. But because you did, it's the one game I ever beat.
Yeah.
You know what I mean back then?
And that's why I think Mega Man 2, why so many people love Mega Man 2, is because we got the easy version. And the game's still it's beatable. But it's challenging but doable. Yeah. I suppose the other Mega Mans where it's just you threw the controller against the wall And then he came back and you threw it against the wall again, and then you had to buy a new system.
It made us good gamers, though. Let me tell you, when Super Mario All-Stars came out for Super Nintendo, it was the first opportunity in the U.S. to get, like, the real Super Mario Brothers 2, you know?
Cause, yeah, the Lost Levels.
Yes, so called. I got the Lost Levels, and I played that game straight through, and back then I used to call it beating it. Now I take issue with that phrase. But that game was brutally hard, and I just tore through it, man. Fuck it. That's the game I had to play.
I think what I mean, overall with this discussion, what I was really thinking is that I think some people get too caught up in review scores a lot of the time, where they think, okay, this is a bad game because everyone else says it is. And I think every game has a defender. Mm-hmm. Every game has someone who likes it for whatever reason. And maybe that's you. So if a game looks interesting to you.
Even Two Worlds, yes.
Even Two Worlds, I mean.
It does. No, it really does.
I know.
Even got a sequel.
If, like, I saw Alpha Protocol, and I thought that looks like a really fun game.
Oh, that game's good, though.
No, I know, but it got critically bashed.
But that got critically 70'd.
Okay, 70 isn't horrible, you know?
The thing with Alpha Protocol was that game was a huge disappointment, even though it was still pretty good.
Well, that's
because people wanted it to be the next Mass Effect, but in the spy world.
I mean, I agree that a 6, 7 range isn't bad, but a lot of people think that.
Yeah.
A lot of people see that and go, that's got to be a terrible game. I don't want to spend my money. What I'm saying is try a game. You don't know until
I play this last week? You know what I mean? Ninja Gaiden 3.
I know. That's what I'm saying.
Exactly.
I might not want to play them because they don't. Ninja Gaiden doesn't look interesting to me.
Oh,
but
it's awesome.
I wouldn't tell you not to play it if you want to. Go for it.
It's awesome.
And I can't say much because I still love Dynasty Warriors.
Exactly. Exactly. There's nothing wrong with Dynasty Warriors. It's not bad. It's a hack and slash, dude. It doesn't have any less or more merit than games like the Simpsons arcade game or the X-Men arcade game or any of those arcade games that like were basically just beat 'em ups. In fact, it's a lot better.
See, I disagree with that statement a little bit because at the time, those were the pinnacle of a beat 'em up. But Dynasty Warriors, I still love the games because I love the Three Kingdoms.
Oh, it's
the
pinnacle of a hack and slash.
But when you're going from Dynasty Warriors 2, 7 was the first one to make real changes, and the changes were like, wow, this is your change.
Well, that's the thing, though. That game is not being criticized because each individual game isn't good. It's being criticized because there's no iteration.
Yeah, and that's kind of what I'm about. It's like,
but if it's that time of year and you want to veg out and whack at things, you get Dynasty Warriors and you have a good weekend.
Or if you're buying a new portable system and you look at the launch titles and you're like, wow, I got Ridge Racer and I got Dynasty Warriors every freaking time. You know? Like if you want to play something on 3DS when it first came out.
I got Samurai Warriors.
Yeah, he picked up Samurai Warriors.
I had fun with it too.
And other people picked up Ridge Racer. The Vita comes out, same thing. There's Dynasty Warriors tried and true, you know? So anyway,
although that may go away, it's gonna be sad because Dynasty Warriors 7 kind of bombed.
What is the consensus here? I think all of us have bad games that we play and love.
Yeah,
games that are when I say bad, I mean that if you ask 2/3 of people
there are technically buggy or problematic games. Again, like I said, Deadly Premonition is one of my top 5 360 games.
All right,
which is amazing. Yeah, I mean, I definitely think it's an awesome game. I don't know if I go that far, but it's awesome.
Yeah. I mean, I'm just saying. Again, that's my...
One quick question. What do you think is the worst game ever made? Real quick. 1 minute spiel.
Oh, my God. You can't drop that on me, man.
I'm going with E.T. for the Atari.
See, I never played it. I've heard how abysmal it
was. E.T. with the Atari was so bad, it almost killed video games.
Right, but I never played it, so I don't feel...
It is just as bad. I've played it. It is just as bad as people have said in the past.
Isn't it like you like lift your head up as one of the mechanics?
Well, there's a thing where there's like a jumping mechanic to where you hold down the button, except sometimes it just gives out for no reason. So you'll like hold it and float and jump, and then sometimes you just fall back down. And there's these like pits you fall in that you don't know are pits because there's this little black circles. And then you can't get out of the pit unless, like, sometimes you jam the button, sometimes you don't. But you just sort of get stuck in the pit. And no one ever gets past, like, the first screen. That's the word I was looking for, screen. No one gets by the first screen because you fall in that pit and you never know how to get out.
Okay.
But apparently it's like you got a storyline or something.
I have a proposition.
Horrible.
Once you guys are done talking about UTI, I have a proposition, but go ahead.
Well, yeah, I was going to say that if we're talking in terms of what it did to gaming, yeah, ET's
sure.
Well, ET, pretty much it's unbeatable. Horrible, and it almost killed games.
Sure, yeah. No, right. Okay, but here's my proposition, okay? Not in the overall sense of if it killed gaming or not, but just in the sense of it feels like a personal affront to you. I think next week we should do, like, each of us should pick a couple games that we say are the worst games of all time.
Well, I think that so like our most disappointing games that we've played.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
So the games that pissed us off the most.
Yes,
all and right. I think we should each do that. Right,
we'll
now,
do it. We'll do it quick.
Final Fantasy VIII is my number one.
Why are you ruining the surprise? Why are you ruining the surprise, Tim?
All right, I'll think of some other good ones. But all right, good. That's okay. My number one.
There are going to be all right. So we're each going to have three. So we'll be thinking about that in the next week or so, and we'll come in with our most disappointing games. So you can have that to look forward to.
Yeah.
And if you want to leave your list of most disappointing games in the comments section, that would be awesome. And we will certainly talk about those on the podcast next week if you do that. And you can also reach us at I guess my email is the best right now. I'm about to set up the one for the Joy of Gaming. But for right now, rtlepore@gmail.com. And you can also, like I said, leave comments on our site, thejoyofgaming.com. And Rich Lepore.
My name is Jordan Alseca.
And you had something to say. Sorry.
Yeah, I was just gonna say we see there are hits on the site. So let us know what you guys think. We'd really like to hear.
Yeah,
we
know you guys are there. So make yourself known. Tell us what's going on in your world, what games you're playing, what you're enjoying. We're interested. And we'll read anything interesting on the podcast.
Yeah.
Once again, my name is Rich Lepore.
Jordan Alseca.
And Tim McNeil.
And we will see you on the Joy of Gaming episode 8 next week. Bye-bye.